right into it. Coming to you live from Music City, USA, aka Nashville, Tennessee. This is the All Anal Podcast with your host, Sebastian Starr. I'm your host, Sebastian Starr. And tonight, it's a really late night, but this is going to be the norm moving forward as proceedings proceed. This evening, we are going to be discussing the infamous scandal of Hollywood elites. Specifically, Dan Schneider, who is a CEO creator from Nickelodeon, and Sean P. Diddy Combs. Very interesting that the two of these gentlemen find themselves in the media at around the same time. Not for the first time, but for the first time together. And the suspicions and conspiracy theories kind of surrounding them and how they operate in their fields is coming to light so catastrophically that we, as the viewers on the outside looking in, can't help but just giggle at everything that's falling apart. So let's just dive right into it. Like I said, I was speaking with my coworker about this evening, and we have the tendency to have pretty decent conversations with one another. And what we kind of boiled it down to was that these two men represent the devils in the industries that people often warn up-and-coming famous people about. You hear the cliche stories of the men in black suits with the sunglasses and briefcases that don't say much, but they offer you a contract. They say, sign here and you will be the next big thing coming up. You will be rich. You will be famous. You will be successful. You will be loved and adored and all of this. And there's always, with those contracts, the fine print is never really established and understood until it's too late. Now, obviously, this is an over-exaggerated, you know, dramatized ideology, but I think it speaks volumes in regards to what's currently happening with both Dan Schneider and Sean P. Diddy Combs. So I wrote a little diagram here of the dangerous similarities between these two men. And I think by the end of it, it'll all make sense as to what everything that I'm trying to say kind of boils down to. But we're going to start with Dan Schneider, since he was kind of in the hot seat first. So for those of you who may not be aware, this past month, I'm going to say, all of the hype has kind of been circling around this docu-series called Quiet on Set. Quiet on Set is available to stream on HBO Max, or just Max, whatever you want to call it. And it was basically a docu-series about the harsh realities and twisted truths that come from the behind-the-scenes knowledge of some of our favorite and most famous children shows from the Nickelodeon network from the late 90s into the early 2000s. Now, me personally, myself, I have not sat down in front of a TV and clicked play on the docuseries and watched it from start to finish, mainly because I didn't really have to, because when a scandal, and I'm using the word scandal very lightly, but when a scandal like that hits the airways, it does not take long for people to catch wind of it, and it's everywhere. You know what I'm saying? It goes viral so quickly. And one of the beautiful pros of social media and the internet is that information is almost instantaneously available whenever you need it. So they teased the docuseries a couple of months ago, and I was like, oh my goodness, you know, like everybody else. So when it finally dropped, of course, everybody's talking about it, and the way that social media works to fuel the fire, if you will, is you get enough people talking about it, then other people who haven't looked into it themselves will eventually do so out of curiosity, just to see if it's as good or as bad or as controversial or as wild or as whatever that everybody is saying. That's how shit circulates regularly. So I didn't need to watch the docuseries on HBO because I had seen more than enough on various social media platforms. And even though Dan Schneider was at the center of all of this, he wasn't the worst villain. You can say that he is guilty by association because he allowed these things to happen on his shows, on his, you know, Hollywood sets, to his actors and actresses. And he is responsible for a lot of trauma and humiliation that not just the children, but the adults were facing. And when you think of a man, when you think of a person, period, who has that much power, money, influence, direction over another mass group of people, they are immediately viewed as intimidating. And all you want to do, and that's all people kept saying, was like, you just want to stay on Dan's good side. You don't want to make Dan upset. You don't want to hurt his feelings. You don't want to tell him no, because he can end your career as soon as it gets started and you will never work in Hollywood again. That is a level of power that dictators have, that cult leaders have, that manipulative, you know, CEOs have. And that's exactly what he was. So just a quick little rundown of the Quiet on the Set scandals. And the worst one I'm gonna say for last, but in addition to the obvious, you know, conspiracy theories surrounding Dan Schneider over the past couple of years. Oh, he's got a weird foot fetish. He's always talking about feet and doing stuff to feet and showing pictures of people's feet, you know. And this was also mentioned, oh, the whole Ariana Grande situation with her doing these really weird, random, inappropriate sketches and skits to get laughs. And you know, you're an adult perceiving this and it's so obviously inappropriate. It just makes you uncomfortable to watch. In addition to all of that, it was alleged and told, and whatever, however you want to label it, that he was forcing the women on his staff to give him massages in between takes and on the set, and no one said anything because it's Dan Schneider. You know, he's the reason why all of us are here in the first place. You can't say no to Dan. There was rumors speculating about him potentially being the father to Jamie Lynn Spears's firstborn child. The reason why she had to quit Zoe 101 was because she was pregnant at 16. People are saying that's Dan Schneider's baby. Wild. Okay. Amanda Bynes popped back up in conversation. She wasn't actually in the docuseries, but of course, Amanda Bynes was like the golden girl of Nickelodeon in the late 90s and the early 2000s. Her face was everywhere. Her popularity status couldn't have been higher. And of course, like a dark, twisted shadow, everywhere she went, this motherfucker was right behind her, you know? And people brought up old tweets from a, you know, disowned or disclaimed Twitter account that was run by her under a different name, saying stuff like, oh, could you imagine getting an abortion at 13 from your boss or for your boss's baby or whatever, something like that. And just, of course, over the years, how Amanda Bynes' character has kind of withered into this more concerned, you know, way of viewing the world. People are concerned about Amanda Bynes the way they were concerned about Lindsay Lohan for a couple of years, but Lindsay Lohan eventually cleaned up her act. Amanda Bynes is still not spiraling, but staying out of the spotlight while also trying to be in it. It's kind of a weird relationship. What else do they talk about? The sexism in the workplace. The female writers weren't getting, you know, credited. They weren't getting paid. They weren't getting fair treatment in comparison to their male counterparts. That's nothing new. That happens in corporate America all the time. It's just now people can bring it to light and address it. Obviously the racial discrimination. They had all the black kids playing the token black people in most of their sketches, skits, and comedy shows, and they just had to bite their tongues and grit their teeth and just deal with it. There was one young man whose mom was not for the bullshit. She peeped that there was some weirdo schmirdo shit happening, And she pulled her son out of it so quickly. And he admitted that he resented her for that for a very long time, because it's like, you ruined my chances of being a star. But looking back at it, she really, for real, like, saved his life. So he was in it, but he wasn't in it for too long because his mom peaked game and she got him out of there. And now we get to the climax of this dramatic ass story, which is Drake Bell, best known for his role as Drake in Drake and Josh, was the center of the most horrendous scandal involving a Mr. Brian Peck, who sexually assaulted him in the worst of ways for who knows how long. I'm guesstimating about a year and a half to 2 years, because he said that it started a little bit after his 15th birthday and it didn't stop until he got a girlfriend, and the girlfriend's mom was like, what's going on with you and this grown ass man, and why is he blowing you up like this, and what do you need to talk to somebody, are you okay? So I'm going to give it a year and a half to 2 years. They never really specified and said, but maybe they did and I just didn't know because I didn't watch the actual thing, right? So all of this was happening while he was filming Drake and Josh. Drake and Josh is his new show where he's like one of the two main characters. And while this is happening, he is getting continuously and regularly assaulted by a grown ass man. And here's the kicker. This disgusting ass grown ass man got slapped with a 16-month sentence and only served about 4 of them. And then when he got out of jail, yeah, he had to register as a sex offender for the rest of his life, sure. But that did not stop Hollywood from hiring him to work on other TV networks and other children's shows and be around other children. And he's still just out in the world living his best life, doing whatever he wants to do. And it's disgusting because who do you think you are? And even though, again, Dan Schneider wasn't the head honcho, well, not the head honcho, he was definitely the head honcho, even though he wasn't the one, you know, getting caught with his hand in the cookie jar, so to speak, you employed this man. You had to have gave him a, and it says a lot about how things can just get swept under the rug so easily in Hollywood, that a registered sex offender who was arrested and charged and prosecuted, even though it was a bullshit sentence, he was arrested, he was charged, he was prosecuted for violating in the worst of ways a 15-year-old boy. And you're going to just put him in a room with other 15-year-old boys and not say anything? Like, it's a terrifying thing to think about. But that's kind of where that metaphor for the contract comes into play. Now, this isn't to say that Drake Bell signed any kind of contract to sell his soul or anything like that. But you have other Drake Bells that exist in the world of entertainment. They just haven't spoken up about their abuse with these elites, because either they're under contract not to say anything, they've been paid off, they're being harassed, maybe stalked even, or, and this is the more selfish answer, is they are afraid of losing everything that they've gained over years and years and years of struggling to be whatever. Whether it's an actor, a singer, a musician, you have been working on this for your whole life, pretty much. You're right there at the door. All you got to do is walk through. But as soon as you do, you can't turn around. You can't go back. And some people are willing to sell themselves for that luxury, that fantasy, that idea that if I do this, everyone's going to love me. And I'm going to be so famous and so rich and so happy. Nothing like that, I feel like, comes at a cost. especially not your morality, your, you know, dignity, your anything like that. It's just not worth it to me. But that's just me. And I know that a lot of people out of desperation will do heinous and unspeakable things or allow such things to happen to them. They really don't even matter no more. But that was just one side of the spectrum. Now let's move over to the other side, into the music industry, which I would argue is just as vile, if not more vile, than Hollywood and showbiz, so to speak. So I haven't, first of all, I have a personal bias against Sean Combs. I've never really cared for him as a musician, as an artist. And I have seen the way he treats people due to his little reality show run in the early 2000s. He just doesn't seem like a good guy to me. So I never really paid attention. But after the Cassidy scandal that happened last year, she filed that lawsuit against him for violent acts against her that he performed throughout the course of their relationship. And he just settled for like that fat ass lump sum. What was like $10 million, something like that. I don't know what it was, but he settled lickety split. And everybody was like, oh yeah, he did that shit. Whatever she said he did to her, he did it. Because you're not even going to take it to court. You're not even going to attempt to, you know, vouch for yourself, to defend yourself, to allow your side of the story to be told. You just paid her off what she was asking for and you left her the fuck alone. First of all, thank you for doing that, because most people don't. But it was the quickness in which it occurred that had everybody on the internet in the world saying, he did that, whatever she said he did it. Because, and this is a bit of a side note, if you think about the Johnny Depp and Amber Heard case that happened year before last, and I was glued to my phone for that shit. That was a scandal of the century as far as I was concerned. If you paid attention to that court case, he took her to court. She took him to court. If she had that, first of all, she's delusional. But if she was under the impression that she could have won that case, that's the only reason why she took him to court. You only go to court if you think you're going to win the case. You plead guilty and pay off whatever you pay off just to get it over with. You don't even try to fight because you probably did that shit. But you only take a case to court if you feel like you can win and get out on the other end type shit. He didn't even bother doing that. He just said, here you go. And that was the end of it. So that was enough for me to be like, yeah, he did that shit. Whatever she said he did it. So fast forward to this year, he's in the news again. Now, again, I have a personal bias against him. I'm not following his career. I mean, I scroll past the article or two saying, oh, he's with so-and-so this year or whatever the case may be. But from what I understand and from what I'm picking up is he's allegedly being accused of fondling or sexually assaulting young men in the industry that he has worked with directly over the course of like a couple of decades. Like, he's been doing this for a while. And the shit-splitting kicker about that particular situation is people are afraid, again, they're afraid to come up and speak and come forward about whatever they've experienced because he may have them under a contract saying, you're not allowed to talk about this. And he probably paid off a shit ton of people to make sure that nothing was ever said. Or, you know, they're probably being harassed and stuff. You see the pattern here. There's a pattern here. And, you know, you've reached a point now where it's like, man, I don't even care. So from what I understand about the current events is that it was alleged that he had something freaky deaky going on with Meek Mill. And they try to spin Usher into that conversation. And people are just speculating the way people speculate. Now, Here's where it gets even more interesting, because I think just today, the federal government raided both his Los Angeles and Miami homes while he fled via private jet, quote unquote, to another country, only for people on the internet to be like, he never left the country. His jet's still here. He's walking around the Miami airport in the private jets division or whatever the hell rich people go to catch a flight. And it's just the more and more it gets discussed, the worse and worse it gets. So I got to thinking as I was talking to my coworker this evening about those two scandalous situations involving two very powerful men. And this is what I wrote as far as what those two gentlemen have in common. You have Dan Schneider, CEO, creator over at Nickelodeon, or at least he was for about 20 something years, you know, responsible for a lot of shows. iCarly, Drake and Josh, all that. Harry Danger, Sam and Cat, all of those, right? Victorious is another one, real big one. You got Sean P. Diddy Combs, probably one of the biggest music moguls in the country, responsible for creating great groups of musicians, bringing in some very extraordinary independent artists and having them collab with other artists of a great caliber as well. And, you know, putting together individuals who you would have never thought to concoct. And he's great at his job. He's been doing it for years. He knows what he's doing. He's an expert. Dan Schneider, been doing this for years. He knows what he's doing. He's an expert. What do these two men have in common? Well, I'll tell you. They are unofficial talent scouts. They may pass a talented individual, and look at them and say, they have a lot of potential to be great. They go up to said individual, hey, I can make you famous. I can make you a superstar. I can have the whole world falling in love with you. Sounds familiar. They take advantage of their talent. When Dan Schneider finds the actor or the actress, he will get them in this false sense of comfortability and then start doing some weird shit. Sean Combs is the exact same way. He'll scout out these groups, these individuals, these musicians, you know, spoon feed them the life of luxury. And once they get good and comfortable, he gonna start doing some weird shit. It never fails. They are known to verbally abuse their staff. And, you know, Dan Schneider will talk crazy to motherfuckers in a minute, but he'll also manipulate with what he's saying and how he's saying it. And, you know, that'll have people feeling some type of way. They'll feel guilty for, you know, turning down his request, or they'll put that on themselves more. Sean Combs is just verbally abusive. He'll yell, scream, cuss, all types of shit at people. I've seen the videos. I know what he's capable of. They both have power and influence in their selective fields. Dan Schneider, again, is responsible for creating some of the greatest childhood shows of the late 2000s into the early 2010s, and even in the late 90s. And he can pluck you out of the garden like a flower and let you blossom and bloom into the world. And then the next thing you know, everybody knows who you are. Everybody loves you. Everyone's obsessed with you. Everyone is like, oh my God, I can't believe it's so-and-so. Dan Schneider has got that in his head that he's responsible for that. Sean Combs is the exact same way. When he did the whole Making the Band thing, and I remember watching Making the Band from like start to finish, when he started that, he literally had auditions for these young men and women to come into and showcase what they could do. And he just picked his favorites. And then the mission began. Okay, we're going to make y'all superstars. And this is how we're going to do it. It's going to be a lot of work. And it's going to be a lot of effort and time and energy. But it's going to be great. And y'all are going to be famous. And everybody's going to love you. And that's exactly what happened. He put these two bands, I'm talking about seasons 2 and 3 specifically, with Danity Kane and Day 26. He put these individuals on a pedestal, on a platform. and he introduced them to the world, which back in the, you know, mid-2000s, the only way you could do that is having a killer TV show on MTV or VH1 or whatever. And that's exactly what he did. They became platinum-selling superstars almost overnight because of him. He got it into his head that he did that. And finally, both of these men have a terrible, terrible God complex, when in reality, they are devils in disguise. That cliche, stereotypical idea of Hollywood and the music industry, sign this contract, all of your dreams will come true. But there's a catch for Dan Schneider is you got to give me massages. I got to tickle your feet. I got to put peanut butter all over your body and let dogs lick it off. I got to make you squeeze a potato to get the juice out. I got to shoot lotion in your face and on your eyes and in your hair. I gotta harass you every time you come around me. I gotta touch you whenever I feel like it. I demand hugs from you. I demand back rubs and shoulder rubs from you. I want you to drink alcohol with me. These are teenagers. Sometimes even as young as like 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. Like, these are children. And that's the price of doing business. Now, obviously, you got to ask, well, where are the parents? They right there, watching, observing, not saying a word because they want that money. And that's the ugly truth behind it, is that a lot of these parents allowed their children to be violated and taken advantage of because they were getting money. Jeanette McCurdy is a perfect example. She wrote a whole book about how her mom allowed her to get taken advantage of in Hollywood just for the sake of making money. Even up until the day she died, like one of the last couple of things, I seen the interviews, I seen the videos. Her mom was calling her all types of this, that, and the third, but still asking her for shit. And I was saying this, a 13-year-old child should not be responsible for their entire family's financial debt. At 13 years old, you shouldn't have the burden of being the sole provider, the sole breadwinner for your entire family. So that alone was already crossing the line. When you put it on your 13-year-old child's shoulders that they are responsible for everybody in your house, like, you're insane if you think I'm gonna let that shit happen. Like, no, absolutely not. And on the other side of that spectrum with Sean Combs, this God complex, but really you're the devil in disguise. Yeah, here you go. Sign that contract right there for me. You want to be famous, right? You want to be a singer? You want to be a rapper? You want to be a dancer? I got you. I give you all the money in the world, all the fame in the world, everything that you could ever desire. I can make that happen for you. But I want you to stay the night at my house. I want you to go swimming with me. I want you to try these drinks. I want you to come into this room and, you know, let me loosen you up a little bit. Just relax, you know, just let me take full and total control. You're sick. And what's fucked up about that is the majority of the time they were adults. So you ain't got your parents to peep game and pull you out of it. And you ain't gonna say, nah, I'm not finna do that shit, because you want what he has to offer. And again, that's how they get you. They spoon feed you this fantasy, this ideology that, oh, this is going to be so great. And then they snatch it away from you real, real quick just to show you what your life could be if you listen to them. And then they make you sign that contract. And the final note that I want to make about this topic is that it reminds me a lot of the movie Bedazzled with Elizabeth Hurley and Brendan Fraser. If you don't know, Elizabeth Hurley plays the devil. And this isn't a metaphoric, you know, like, symbolism. No, she is the devil. She is the devil in this movie. And Brendan Fraser is your typical people-pleasing, awkward silence drawing, you know, pathetic attempt at a social life human being you could possibly fathom. And he just becomes an easy target for someone like the devil to manipulate, take advantage of, use to their, you know, own for their own personal gain. And in that movie, she has him sign a contract, literally signing over his soul for 7 wishes. And with those 7 wishes, he can have whatever he wants. He can be as rich as he wants, as famous as he wants, as successful, as handsome, as artistic and intelligent. And he always gets the girl of his dreams in every single one of these scenarios. But there's always a catch. Because not only did you sell your soul to me, I can fuck up your life however I want to at any time. I can make any changes without your consent, permission, none of that. Because I'm the one in control. You never had to say so. I was the one who was pulling the strings the whole time. This is my puppet show. You just the one on the line. And that's what we're seeing in real time. With this docuseries, with the, you know, the raids on P. Diddy House and everything that's just been going on, we're getting a first-hand view of just how batshit crazy the entertainment industry in general can get. Because again, you have a music mogul, you have a CEO television content creator. Both of them are working in fields that anybody would die to and kill to get their big toe in. And they have it in their heads that they can do whatever they want because of the amount of power and manipulation and control and influence they have over everyone in the industry. It's a dangerous, dangerous game. And these niggas have been playing it for a very long time. But like most things that don't last forever, they done got caught up in their own bullshit. So now they in this tidal wave of either trying to save face, which is what Dan Schneider is doing, that pathetic ass post docuseries interview that he did, which nobody asked for and everybody hated, or they can flee from it, like what Sean Combs is doing, trying to catch a flight to another country where he can't be touched. Either way it goes, they're going to have to answer for their indiscretions eventually. And man, oh man, when that shit hits the fan for reals, that's going to be one for the books, and I can't wait to see it. But that was my whole 2 cents on the whole recent scandal of the times. Again, these two individuals have a God complex, a superiority complex, but you're just making deals with the devil at this point. It's just in two different avenues. It's the exact same scenario, just in two different ways. But that's me doing what I do best. I appreciate anyone and everyone who wanted to bop in and, you know, check out what was going on. I appreciate it, as always. And until next time, I'll speak with you all later.